On today's show, part two of us talking about Cleveland Cavaliers topics and things that we didn't talk about enough last season. Let's dive in.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Go to birddogs.com/LockedOnNBA or enter our promo code LockedOnNBA for a free water bottle with any purchase. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you. All right, I'm Chris Manning. That is Evan Damrell. Thanks again to Jake Stevens, as always, for his work on production. Part two today of our episodes this week, looking at things we didn't talk about enough last season to apply to this season. Evan, we have an overlap on one. I think yours, the one you had going to present today, and then I have two later on. You did two last time. I had one last time. I think yours is a good place to start because I think it leads in to mine. They are both centered on Isaac Okoro. So why don't you start and tell me what you're thinking about Isaac Okoro. Fashion Nova brand ambassador, I should note. I'm based seeing his Instagram. He's a men's Fashion Nova men's fashion ambassador. And I love that for him.
So last season, J.B. Bickerstaff admitted to the fact that during Evan Mobley's rookie year that Isaac Okoro was in a box, more or less offensively. You could see it, like the Cavs weren't leaning much on Okoro offensively. I don't think there's much to really say that Okoro could provide you offensively other than like slashing or cutting towards the basket and maybe like the every few and now between like three-pointer, but Okoro's offensive development really like was hamstrung when Evan Mobley and the Cavs suddenly became good, whether that's Darius Garland and Jared Allen becoming all-star caliber players, but it's neither here nor there. But you look at like Okoro's third season and a lot of people were like, oh my God, he sucks. Like he shouldn't be picked top five overall.
I mean, sure, there's a lot of, I would say
he probably shouldn't have, but there's like FOMO when you look at like Tyrese Halliburton or you look at like even Obi Toppin, who went from New York to Indiana, but like could provide you something offensively, at least at a position of need at power forward, especially when Kevin Love was let go by the Cavs. But either way, like Isaac Okoro provided you a lot of things defensively. I would argue to say that he was the best answer to Jalen Brunson in the playoffs of the Cavs, but you saw this weird thing where he went from quote unquote being out of the box to jumping between the starting lineup or the bench, or at least in the playoffs, like completely out of the rotation entirely. And there's that moment where you say, okay, there's the crystallization of like what Isaac Okoro can be in that game winner against the Brooklyn Nets, or and that just means like confidence from Okoro and taking that shot and like relying on that shot, or the Cavs coaching staff or his teammates relying on Okoro to make that game winning shot in a clutch moment like that. But I just never think Isaac Okoro left that box on offense, and they're still kind of figuring out what he can be as a player. And it's now do or die time. Like, do you trade him or do you try to find like a Jared Vanderbilt type extension where you admit like, okay, he's not the offensive player, but he gives us enough defense, but he isn't viable in the playoffs? Or I don't know, like Isaac Okoro is just like a mystery box to me and like what he can be, because he just hasn't had that room to grow offensively. And there's ways the Cavs can utilize him, but also like Okoro just hasn't given me enough juice to say like, okay, yeah, he is a reliable enough offensive option to be a player that impacts on either end of the floor and can be like a consistent rotation member for this Cavs team.
So I just think, I don't think he's like a mystery box anymore, because I think like after 3 years, regardless of like what or has not been empowered to him, what or has not happened, like I think once you have 3 years of play and you've played, you know, your minutes have dropped, whatever you've played, somewhere between 1,600 and 2,000 minutes a season, I think you do have some notes on what you are. I think he is still, like, he hasn't turned 23 yet. This is still a relatively young player, but he's extension eligible. He will be a restricted free agent next summer if and when the Cavs don't agree to a contract extension with him. I think we kind of know what he is. What I do think is as much as he's been put in the box, there has been improvement that would give me some optimism. He's been better at the rim each and every year. His effective field percentage has gone up every year. He's at 36% from three last year. 37% from the corner. Those are not like elite shooting numbers. Clearly, teams didn't respect him. The Knicks, even in the playoffs, where I thought he actually looked up to the moment to some degree. Like, is Hazard happened with him? What happened with like Devin Vassell, where Devin Vassell's popped, or other guys in that draft that have turned out to be better? No. Do I think it's fair to say like this guy exactly is totally done? No, but do I think we kind of do know what he is and what his limitations are going to be? I think we are there with him a little bit. And yes, has he moved into a box? Yes, but I think that's just when you aren't Darius Garland, when you aren't Evan Mobley, when you aren't Donovan Mitchell, that's what happens. Like Jared Allen is in a box. Jared Allen is asked to do two things, right? Like I think that's just the reality of when you're not the one of the two or three best guys on a team, you end up in a box. That's just life.
So what are the two things Jared Allen is asked of because he's in a box in your eyes?
He rim runs. His job on offense is job to set screens and to get to the rim and dunk. He's not really he occasionally takes a little 16-foot floater. But like what else does he do on offense other than screen and roll to the rim and try to dunk the ball? Like his job on offense is very defined. That's a box.
Okay, I agree with you. What does Isaac Okoro do on offense?
Then? Isaac Okoro's job is to stand in the corner and his job is to at times read the corner when there's an opportunity to crash in and cut. That's what he's asked to do. That's his box. His box is to stand there and be a shooter and maybe fill in backspace if the opportunity presents itself.
So with that said, that box is much smaller than Jared Allen's because of just...
Well, Jared Allen's better. Better in his box.
Do you say the box that is Isaac Okoro just isn't worth it anymore for the Cavs and you look at other rotation options? Because if that's all Isaac Okoro can give you on a consistent night-to-night basis on offense, like, shoot, I look at the other players on my bench, like whether it's Caris LeVert, George Niang, Ty Jerome, even Ricky Rubio, because Rubio can provide you playmaking at least, even if his shot isn't there, like, Okoro's just so minuscule in what he provides to the Cavs right now that, like, I can't justifiably say that, yeah, he is reliable on either end of the court because you can patchwork and make ways to work on defense with a guy like Jerome or Niang or even Rubio, who isn't maybe not 100% or is regressed to the mean enough that he's not a plus-plus defender like he was in that weird contract here that was before the ACL tear. Like that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like the Cavs have kind of put a quarter on this box and then they became, as lame as this sounds, good too soon in the aspect that they had to find a way to sacrifice for role players like Isaac Okoro that don't have the luxury to grow and learn and develop from his mistakes. And the Cavs now can't sacrifice a handful or maybe two handfuls of possessions just to make sure like Okoro has like the room to grow and develop from what he can and can't be as a player. And like, that's where I get to the point, like maybe you have to cut bait and just use him as a trade asset because you're now focused on winning now versus player development. Like it's an untenable position for the Cavs to be in. And I don't know. Like I think I picked more like nuanced ish or like broader stroke topics to discuss, but like Okoro's offense is just not existent for me because I agree with you with all your points, but looking at like a top five pick, seeing it not pan out like this, or the Cavs not having the bandwidth to allow it to pan out like it should have, it is a little disappointing, I think is what I'm getting at.
It absolutely is. He's the worst draft pick they've had since LeBron left. Colin Sexton is a better NBA player than Isaac Okoro. Darius Garland is a better NBA player than Isaac Okoro. Oh, Dylan Windler's a worse draft pick, actually, but Okoro was a top five pick. And well, Windler...
Okay, I Windler, would say Windler was a late and pick. Kevin Porter Jr. are much
sure. worse draft okay. picks. Of your, lot, of your lottery picks. Of your lottery picks. Fair. Sexton's okay, a better player. Garland's a better player. Mobley's a better player. Okoro's the worst one of that bunch. We're going to talk next. I have the thing next where I think... even though I wouldn't say he killed it in the playoffs, I think there's something about him that made me think he acquitted himself. So I'm going to make the case for that, and we'll get into the weirdness of what that means coming up next. Today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Bird Dogs, you're never going to want to take them off. They make you look good. Burdock stretch khaki shorts are designed to feel it slimmer through the thigh and leg, giving you a truly sculpted look. They fit way better than regular shorts and are made of a strict, stiff, restricting cotton. They fix these issues by inventing a cloud knit fabric that looks just like khaki but stretches, so you get a way slimmer fit without having to sacrifice movement. Burdock's uses anti-sweat wicking fabric that keeps you cool and dry all day long. Burdock's are functional for any occasion: a golf game, going on a date, evening out, pool, working out, all that stuff. And right now, you can go to burdocks.com/lockedonNBA and enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA at checkout for a free Burdock's water bottle with your order. They have sent us some amazing stuff the last couple of months, including free Burdock's that I wear all the time. I know Evan does as well, but they sent us a great tumbler. Evan has the hat on right now, and I'm sure the water bottle, hopefully we get that as well. That's going to be great, too. That, again, go to burdocks.com/lockedonNBA for a free water bottle at checkout. Again, you will not want to take your Burdock's off. We promise you. All right, back here. So here's the thing about Okoro. I agree with everything we've discussed on. I think his role in the play, his role and him getting fewer minutes, he went from 32 minutes as a rookie, albeit on a bad team, to 29.6 the next year, and then he was down to 21.3 last year, and last year started 46 games, which is the lowest number of his career. That tells you something. That is a data point that tells you about what the Cavs think. And yet, I go to the playoffs, and you look at how he acquitted himself, how he didn't look scared, how the physicality didn't bother him. And I'm not going to, his playoffs, his numbers in the playoffs, you know, not good. 31% from three. That's not going to cut it. The Knicks left him open. He didn't make him pay. He only played 15 minutes a game. Okay. Played in the five games, started two of them in the playoffs. I do think he is someone that physicality-wise, mentality-wise, can scale up. The question is, is the other stuff ever going to catch up? And I think so far the answer is no. And where that leaves you is with a guy that I don't think has a lot of trade value. I still think you got to try to bring something out of, but I think it's a really hard thread to line when you do need to win now and it's year four for him and you do have to make some financial decisions on him as well. I mean, that's the other, like, you are just going to have to start making financial decisions on Okoro, and that complicates this too.
So in terms of financials, if the Cavs were able to come to terms with like a 4-year, $48 million deal, with the last year being a player option, the core, would you be okay with that or no?
No, that's way that for what he is, even if you could theoretically trade that, that's less than the mid-level, but that feels like a lot. That feels like a lot for a guy that you're not sure can play in the playoffs and you're going to have all this other money coming.
Okay. The other money coming part, like, I think that makes that argument valid, but like looking through, like, I just keep thinking about that Jared Vanderbilt extension with the Lakers, and that could be a point of comparison to, like, okay, you provide us a lot of defensive upside, you as an Isaac Okoro, but, or Jared Vanderbilt Lakers, but like, you aren't playable on offense in the playoffs, and like you will see reduced minutes and reduced opportunities. But to your point, like, the Cavs are in a weird spot where, like, Okoro was a top five pick. Like, the Vanderbilt was a dude the Lakers traded for, but
Vanderbilt's also 6'9". He can defend big wings.
They're different players entirely in terms of, like, size, physicality, position, whatever. But, like, similar enough that, like, they're good for what they are, what they provide you defensively. But, like, offensively, they are a little less than zero in terms of just what they can give you, like, in terms of just like crunch time minutes. But I don't know, like, I'm surprised, like, the Cavs haven't made more of a, I am and I'm not, as I say this out loud, like, made a more concerted effort to trade Okoro in terms of just finding a situation for him to allow him to grow and develop, and like maybe find a team that believes in his upside as a player, whether it's just what he already gives you defensively or what he can be offensively, because the Cavs are a team based on their offseason moves, whether it's getting Donovan Mitchell or everything they did this last offseason, they are a team that is primed to win now. Like, they don't really have the bandwidth or the luxury to allow players to grow and develop and figure out what they are, especially because, like, in the lens of Okoro, like, he didn't take that year three leap as many of us were hoping. So I don't know what he can or cannot be, but just like looking at this Cavs rotation, like you and I are talking about, like, oh, maybe Isaac Okoro is like the eighth or ninth man for this Cavs team. That is a quite a fall from what he was maybe 2 years ago for this squad as well.
But I think us having that conversation, and you just look at the minutes and where he's at, and the fact that they didn't offer him an extension, like that tells us something.
Valid. It does tell us something. It's all valid, but like, and I think like I go back to like the first thing, like it's disappointing. I think just because you're really hoping like he can evolve and grow and like coalesce with this Cavs team, but unfortunately for Isaac Okoro's development, like the Cavs became better than they were when they first drafted him, because they were a top five pick team the year they drafted him. They were a top three pick team in his sophomore season. And then in year two, it's Evan Mobley's first year. They're suddenly like great. And then expectations just like heighten entirely after they get Donovan Mitchell. And Isaac Okoro is just kind of like dragging along as like, I wouldn't say an anchor, but like just from the wayside. And it's just, I don't know. Like, I wish I could be a fly on the wall when it comes to like conversations on how do the Cavs utilize Isaac Okoro, because I would be a little surprised if he's not in the rotation entirely. Like the Cavs just bench him outright. Like that would be a pretty big sign on how they feel about him. But more than that, like how is he utilized? He's not going to be the starting three, at least heading into camp. And does he get consistent minutes in the rotation, or is he a guy that gets like spot minutes because the Cavs have to kind of create overwhelming perimeter defensive pressure, like on a guy like Jalen Brunson, or I mean, I guess technically speaking, James Harden still with the Sixers, like a guy like that as well. Like if it's an Eastern Conference dogfight, like do the Cavs want to deploy Isaac Okoro? And is he like a guy that like gets like technician spot minutes, or is he a consistent rotation guy? Like, I don't know what he can be, because this team is primed to win now. And Isaac Okoro is just like an unknown variable that could be a meaningful player, but it's only on one end of the court.
I just think, Evan, we're at year three with him, and it's like, this is what he might be. Like, I think at a certain point, financially, minutes-wise, I think you just look at it and say, this might just be what he is. And I think there's something that didn't happen with him. Maybe it's on the organization. Maybe it's the pandemic didn't help. Maybe I do tend to think like there's momentum he could have gotten out of the game winner in Brooklyn that he gets robbed of because he gets hurt and doesn't get to actually build on that after the exact shot that he's always needed to hit. He hits it for a game winner. There's something I think lost by the fact that he didn't get to play there on a human level. But at the same time, it's like and I do think he was okay in the playoffs. But at the same time, it's like you look at this and it's, at a certain point, it's just like you stop being a prospect, and it's like you're in year four. I think you aren't a prospect anymore. Like Darius Garland, like for instance, is still like a young guy in the same way. But it's like he's also going to be in year five, and it's like at a certain point, like you aren't a prospect anymore. You just are an NBA player, and Okoro is like a very flawed NBA player now. And I think what you do with him and all of that is complicated. I think there's a defensive role for him. But is it a very niche role? Yeah. I think that's just, he's a niche, flawed guy that could work out still. Maybe this theory finally figures it out, but I think this is, if it's going to happen, it's now. If it doesn't happen now, then I it's kind of done. All right, coming up next, we got one more topic, and that's going to be why I think the offense has a little more to it than you might think. All right, last topic today. Evan, so the Cavs offense, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's as dynamic as, like, you know, Steve Kerr's read and react Warriors with Steph Curry, or like the best offenses that you're like they run with Jokic, or like what Jordy Fernandez designed up for the Kings. But I think if you go back and you watch, like, Steve Jones, I think, is better at this than anyone at breaking down clips and looking at the sets. The Cavs do have intricacies in the offense. It is not, again, the flashiest thing. I think it is based a lot on your two ball handlers running pick and roll. I don't think it showed out well in the playoffs. I think the offense absolutely got mucked down there, and that is a real, what does that tell you about what your game plan was and all that, I think, is a problem in itself. The offense just wasn't good in the playoffs. And I think that if you look at the numbers in that, pulling them up right now, and the offense, they had the worst offensive rating in the league in the playoffs at 102.2. That's 11 points less than the league average. Like, you're not, as much as we talk about physicality and all of that, you're not, that's not going to work. And as good as the defense still was, that was not the problem. But when I think, if you look at what worked in the regular season and you look at some of the things that they did have in the sets, and you think about how they add Max Strus and George Shank, two shooters that really can move and really can give you spacing you didn't have, I don't really have massive concerns or like worries that the offense doesn't have enough juice to. Could it get better? Yes, I think there's always room for improvement. But I think there's more to it. If you go back and watch it, you go back and process it, I think there's more depth there than maybe J.B. Bickerstaff gets credit for, even if I still don't think he's, you know, like the next great offensive genius. He's like fine and kind of vanilla, but I still think there's more to it than maybe they're giving credit for.
Well, J.B. Bickerstaff, I'd be frank, is more of a defensive first coach. He's not an offensive genius.
And he would tell you that.
Yeah, he would tell you that. He would tell you that three-pointers are fetishized and games are won in the paint, and he's, I guess, not wrong in that respect, because I'm hosting a podcast and he's only been on our show once. JB, if you're listening, feel free to come on again and talk with us about offense. But I am curious to see how the Cavs utilize these new weapons, whether it's Strus or Niang, which are like the bigger fish the Cavs got, or Ty Jerome, or even Damian Jones as well, just to like balance out the offense, stretch out the rotation. Like, do they go 8 deep, 9 deep, 10 deep, even just to give some of their guys like a night off or whatever, but or just like give them a break or breathing room. But like, in my eyes, the Cavs do have a solid baseline offense. Like, they were, and this is a little hypocritical if you've been listening to this series, like the regular season success doesn't mean much, but like offensive rating or like offensive success is translatable to the playoffs more or less. So the Cavs just kind of finding ways that worked and wrinkles that worked, like, was successful for them. And they could maybe translate that to the postseason, but like, it's a solid baseline, but like, they need to grow, extrapolate, and just like empower key players on offense, so it doesn't devolve to, okay, the first react or the first read or the second read, like, didn't work. Do we have off ball cuts? Do we have off ball screens? Do we have stuff happening in the background that allows this team to find more dynamic looks? And I'm curious to see, like, does Strus unlock this a bit more for the Cavs, where they provide that spacing, or the guy who can be the beneficiary of a guy as the fifth option on offense to provide spacing, or just like is left wide open by the defense? Like, there's a lot of ways the Cavs can do this. And I was talking with somebody the other day about this, like, the Cavs have two technical assistant coach openings, with Antonio Legg going to Atlanta, Josh Brockhammer going to Dallas. Do they bring in somebody who provides more of an offensive identity to provide that flow and that offensive flow? Because J.B. Bickerstaff has coaching stints with the Houston Rockets, albeit for like a brief moment, with the Memphis Grizzlies and now the Cavaliers. And like, I think it's pretty clear, like, he doesn't focus 100% on offense. He more so would rather win on defense. Like, do you bring in an assistant to implement more of an offensive system and has a clear understanding that, like, Bickerstaff is the head coach, but is like there to support all the weapons and firepower the Cavs on offense or have on offense, so that when the postseason rolls around, you're able to react and adapt to how opposing defenses are playing or game planning for you, so that you're able to have easier games come postseason time? Because, yeah, like, there's a formula for success here, but like, can the Cavs like expound upon that and make it easier? And like, there's a lot of just, I don't know, it's just like the questions I have about the team, like, what can they do offensively to like reassure me that they aren't going to get pants come playoff time?
I just think the playoff stuff is, you're going to have to get there, like, and prove it. Like, I know that's simplest. Like,
we have no answers between now and, oh my God, May. I'll be married by May of next year, so.
Well, you'll be married well before May.
Like, fair enough.
Chris,
he's going to look wise, heck.
Yeah. Not to say there's nothing to learn from the regular season, but we're not going to learn a ton. Like, I think it is a little bit of wait and see. This also was, like, I think if they were going to hire, to be frank, an assistant coach to come in and do what you're describing, I think it might have happened already.
Yeah, that's...
We're 2 weeks away from Media Day. It might have happened already.
Well, when do they hire Luke Walton?
I will Google this. The other thing So here, while I Google this, let me ask you this.
Because I'm thinking about Luke Walton hiring came out of nowhere. Like, Cavs could drop a hiring.
That was in May.
Oh, May? Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah. Never mind. Yeah, never mind.
So May 31st, after before the finals even started last year. So that was a lead time. Cavs last year, by the way, 7th in offense. Here's the teams with better offenses in Cleveland. Sacramento, New York, Philly, Boston, Denver, Dallas. Golden State, Atlanta, Utah round out the top 10. I kind of just think they have to diagnose what went wrong in the playoffs. And is there something, is it the rebounding stuff? Is it just the small, whatever it is. That to me, and how they adjust to that and what the Knicks did, I think we're going to learn. Let me put it this way. If we're going to learn anything significant in the regular season, teams are going to take what the Knicks did and apply it to how they're going to defend Cleveland as best they can to some degree. Yes, the regular season allows for less specific game planning, but it's going to be in the scouting report now. Mm. How does that adjust, and how does Cleveland adjust to some of that? And then how does the new shooting being added to this group impact that? And then you factor in Mobley growth and other stuff. Let's see where that gets you. And I think that when we get to 40 games or 25 games, just some arbitrary number, and we look at it and we talk about it and we ask some questions about it, I think that's where we're going to learn what this is. I think the offense is going to be fine. Now, it's not going to be gangbusters. I think the defense, which was best in the league last year, is going to have to be that, something like that again. It should be a top 4 or 5 unit. I think if the offense is somewhere in the top 10, that's still the recipe for this team. This was a team that had the second best net rating in the league last year, had bad win luck. I mean, cleaning the glass had them as an expected 55 win regular season team. They lost that, they were 28th in the league in expected win differential. They got unlucky to some degree. This team, I think, is going to be really good, and it's about the subtle adjustments. And I do think there's enough in their regular season sets that they're going to be fine. But what comes in the playoffs, then how does the shooting help them evolve? And does Strus as a guy who can shoot on the move add a level of dynamicism that they just didn't have? Because they did not have a single player that they could play on the roster last year who can do what Strus does. And I think that tells you to me that at least at the top and from Altman and Gansey and that group, they are seeing that there's a need for something there. And I think that's going to push them in a certain direction. If it doesn't, that leads to other questions.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this evolves as the new pieces get into place and the Cavs kind of level up from what they were last year.
All right, let's end there. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Dermott. We'll be back after the weekend. Have a good one, everyone. Peace out. Enjoy yourselves.